There's no moment like this. This is a moment in the ocean where no one almost witnesses. It happens just before sunrise, when the sky is still undecided, when the water reflects nothing and everything feels suspended between night and day. The surface is still, unbroken, a sheet of glass stretching beyond the horizon, but beneath it, the world is already awake. Currents move like invisible rivers. Schools of fish shift direction in perfect unison, reaching to signals we can't see. Light filters down in the faint gradients, dissolving into the blue, then into deeper, something darker, something deeper. And within the shifting layered silence, something moves, not fast, not frantic, precise and deliberate. A shape emerges not from above, but from the side. A silhouette that doesn't quite look right at first, too wide, too flat, too unnatural, until it turns, and suddenly it becomes unmistakable. A head stretched outward like wings, eyes positioned at the ends like watchtowers. A body that seems almost secondary to the strange commanding structure at the front. This is not just a shark, this is the scalloped hammerhead shark. And for millions of years, it has moved through the ocean, like this, quietly, efficiently, perfectly adapted to the world we barely understand. But something is changing, not in the way it moves, not in the way it hunts, it's in its absence. Because in more and more places across the world, the silhouette is no longer there. No movement beneath the surface, no schools gathering in the currents, no presence, just water. And space where something extraordinary used to exist. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Faded Tales. I hope you guys are doing well today. I have been missing, obviously. First week, I had a doctor's appointment. And then last week, I was sick for like a whole week. I still am somehow. I thought it was better until I got here. My voice is still a little bit rough around the edges. But anyway, if you're new here, welcome back to Faded Tales. It's a podcast where we talk about the species that we're losing and the systems are unraveling. And we talk about every tale so none of it gets left behind. If you're older here, you might have noticed the intro music was different. I kind of wanted to spice it up a bit because we're talking about something in the ocean today. Hey, and I thought it was nice to have a new music instead of just the same old one. And I hope it helped you too. So if you didn't listen to the intro, today's episode is about one of the most recognizable animals on the planet, and also one of the most misunderstood. A predator shaped by millions of years of evolution, a species that once thrived across entire oceans, and one that is now disappearing at a faster than it can recover. This is the story of the scalloped hammerhead shark. Not just what it is, but what happens when it's gone. So sit back, relax, grab your cup of hot chocolate, hot tea, hot coffee, whatever hot drink you need for this cold winter morning. I can't believe it's still winter in March. But anyway, sit back, relax, and I'll tell you a story of the scalloped hammerhead shark. So this is going to be a bit different because I have it split in 6 segments. And I hope it's longer for you guys. So this one is about the anatomy of the evolutionary paradox. So if you ask someone to draw a shark, chances are they'd sketch something familiar. Seam-lined body, a pointed snout, a dorsal fin, and cutting through the surface. Efficient, recognizable, expected. Now imagine asking them to draw a hammerhead. Everything changes. The proportions don't make intuitive sense. The head becomes the focal point, wide, flattened, extended outward like a horizontal blade. The eyes are sit far apart, disconnected from the central body in a way that almost feels impractical. At first glance, it looks like it's a design flaw, an evolutionary experiment that shouldn't have worked. But evolution doesn't deal with aesthetics. It deals in survival. And the shape of the scalloped hammerhead shark is not just functional. It is one of the most refined sensory adaptations in the animal kingdom. Now, the defining feature of all hammerhead sharks is the cephalofoil. That is if you don't know what that word is, even I probably mispronounced it, it's the hammerhead-shaped extension in its skull. In scalloped hammerheads, this structure has a subtle indentation along the front edge, giving it the scalloped appearance. But this isn't just a physical trait. It's a multi-purpose biological tool. To understand why it exists, we need to look at how the shark experiences the world, because they don't rely on a single dominant sense. They rely on layers. Let's start with sight. Most predators have forward-facing eyes to maximize depth perception. Others have a side-facing eyes to widen their field of view. Hammerheads do something entirely different. By placing their eyes on the far ends of their cephalofoil, they achieve something remarkable, an expanded visual field that allows them to see above, below, and across wide horizontal planes all at once. Imagine being able to observe nearly everything around you without turning your head. In the open ocean, where threats and prey can approach from any direction, that kind of awareness is invaluable. But there's more. Recent studies suggest that hammerheads might actually have improved binocular vision in certain areas directly in front of them, contrary to earlier assumptions, which means they don't just sacrifice depth perception for range. They may be optimizing both. But vision isn't the only part of the story, because even in clear water, sight has limits. Light fades quickly beneath the surface. Visibility changes with depth, weather, and time of day. So sharks evolve something else, something almost invisible: electroreception. All living organisms produce tiny electrical signals when muscles contract, when nerves fire. There are microbursts of electricity. To us, they're undetectable. To sharks, they are a map. Embedded within the skin of the hammerhead's cephalofoil are thousands of sensory pores connected to structures called the ampulle of Lorenzini. These organs can detect incredibly faint electrical fields down to the millionths of volts. And because the head is so wide, these sensors are spread out across a larger area, which means the shark can compare signals across space. Left side, right side, front edge, it can determine direction, distance, even the shape of what it's sensing. It's not just detecting life, it's locating with precision. Now, imagine a stingray buried beneath the sand, completely still, visible to our eye. To most predators, it's gone, but not to the hammerhead shark. The ray's body is still alive, its heart's still beating. Its muscles still generate electrical signals, and those signals leak into the surrounding environment. The hammerhead glides over the seabed, sweeping side to side, scanning, mapping, until it finds exactly what it's looking for. And this is where the cephalofoil becomes more than a sensor. It becomes a weapon. Once a stingray is located, the hammerhead doesn't immediately bite. Instead, it uses its head to pin the stingray against the ocean floor. It presses down, immobilizing it, preventing escape, reducing risk. Because stingrays are not defenseless. Their barbed tails can inflict serious injury even to a predator. But the hammerhead's approach is calculated, controlled, efficient. Once the ray is pinned, the shark delivers a precise bite, often targeting vital areas. It's not chaos. It's strategy. There is another advantage to the hammer-shaped head that often goes unnoticed. It's something called hydrodynamics. Water is dense, moving through requires energy. And that shape and the shape of an animal's body determines how effectively it can swim. The cephalofoil may act like a hydrofoil, providing lift and improving maneuverability. This allows the hammerhead to make sharp turns, maintain stability, and conserve energy over long distances. This matters a lot because these sharks don't just hunt locally. They travel. When you put it all together, the scalloped hammerhead shark starts looking strange. Stops looking strange. and starts looking inevitable. Every part of its design serves a purpose. The wide head enhances sensory detection. The eye placement expands awareness. The structure aids in hunting. The shape improves movement. It is not an accident. It's a solution. A response to millions of years of environmental pressure, competition, and adaptation. And for a very long time, it worked. The scalloped hammerhead shark became one of the most successful predators in the ocean. Not because it was the fastest, not because it was the largest, but because it was one of the most finely tuned, which is what makes what's happening now so difficult to understand. Because when something this well adapted, this specialized, begins to disappear, this is not evolution. This is something at work. Now, for an animal, I explained before, like, for an animal so perfectly designed for hunting, you might expect it to live, this is like segment two, sorry. So this segment's going to be about like the social behavior, schooling, and migration of like the shark, the hammerhead shark. For an animal so perfectly designed for hunting, you might expect the scalloped hammerhead shark to live alone, to move silently through the ocean as an individual predator, self-contained, self-reliant. At night, that's exactly what it does. But during the day, the story changes completely. In certain parts of the world, along underwater mountains, near island chains, and at the edges of deep ocean drop-offs, something unusual happens. The water begins to fill, not with fish, not with plankton, with sharks. Dozens at first, then hundreds, sometimes more. Scalloped hammerheads gather in large schools, dense layered groups that hover in the water column, moving slowly, almost rhythmically, as currents pass through them. To a diver, it can feel surreal. Not threatening, not chaotic, just overwhelming. A presence. Now, this behavior changes one of the most persistent ideas that we have about sharks, that they are solitary by nature. Because the scalloped hammerheads are not just occasionally social, they are consistently social during specific times and specific places. And that raises a fundamental question. Why? Well, there's a couple theories. So theory one is safety numbers. Even apex predators are not invincible. Young hammerheads especially are vulnerable to larger sharks, like tiger sharks or great hammerheads, because, yeah, there's multiple hammerhead shark species. By forming schools, individuals may reduce their chances of being targeted. It is the same principle seen in fish, birds, and even mammals. If you're part of a group, the odds of being singled out are decreased. And here's the complication. Many of these schools consist of adult hammerhead sharks, fully grown. Capable of predators that in their own rights, so protection alone doesn't fully explain it. Now, theory number two, reproductive strategy. Another possibility is that these aggregations are linked to mating, bringing large numbers of individuals together, increasing the chances of encountering potential partners. But unlike some species that display obvious mating behaviors, scalloped hammerheads are relatively subtle. There are no dramatic courtship displays, no clear rituals that we've fully documented, which makes this theory plausible, but incomplete. Now there's the third theory, navigation and memory. There's a growing evidence that hammerhead sharks follow consistent migratory routes, returning to the same seamounts and coastal regions year after year. These locations may act as navigational landmarks, points of reference in an otherwise featureless ocean. And schooling could play a role in reinforcing these patterns. Younger individuals may learn routes by following older ones. Groups may collectively remember pathways across vast distances. If that is true, then these schools aren't just gatherings, they're informational networks. Now, there's a fourth theory as well, which is energy conservation. Then there is the physics of movement. Swimming in a group can reduce drag and conserve of energy, similar to how birds fly in formation. In environments where food's availability fluctuates, conserving energy can be the difference between survival and starvation. By aligning their movements with currents and with each other, hammerheads may be optimizing their efficiency. Now, each of these explanations makes sense, and the truth is, it's probably not just one. It's likely a combination. Safety, reproduction, navigation, efficiency, layered together, just like the sensory systems that define them. What's even more fascinating in the school is that these schools are not just random. There is structure, hierarchy, order. Studies have shown that females often dominate in these groups, particularly large, more mature individuals. Males tend to occupy the edges or remain more solitary. Why? This could be related to reproductive dynamics or energy needs, or even subtle social behaviors we don't fully understand yet. But the key point is this. These are not mindless aggregations. These are organized systems. And then night falls. Light disappears quickly in the ocean. Within minutes, visibility stops. Shadows dissolve, and the structure of the school begins to break. One by one, the hammerheads peel away. No signal we can detect. No obvious trigger. Just gradual unraveling until the group is gone, and each individual is alone again. This is when the scalloped hammerhead shark becomes something else entirely, a solitary hunter, moving through deeper water, covering long distances, tracking prey across terrain that is no longer visible, but is perceptible through other senses. One of the most remarkable aspects of scalloped hammerhead's behavior is their ability to travel vast distances with apparent precision. Tagging studies have revealed migrations spanning hundreds, sometimes thousands of kilometers across open ocean with no obvious landmarks, no visible boundaries. So how do they do it? Well, there is an increasing evidence that hammerhead sharks may use Earth's magnetic field as a navigational tool. You heard that right. They're kind of using an internal compass, sensitive to subtle variations in magnetic intensity and direction. This ability, known as magnetoreception, is found in several marine species, including sea turtles and some fish. For hammerheads, it could explain how they return to the same seamounts or coastal regions year after year. Even after long, seemingly aimless journeys. In addition to magnetic cues, sharks have also an acute sense of smell. They can detect chemical signals in the water, traces left behind prey, other sharks, or environmental changes. These cues may help them navigate on a more localized scale. Combined with memory, yes, sharks have demonstrated the ability to learn and remember patterns. They may be build a complex internal map of their environments, not visual, not fixed, but dynamic. Migration isn't just impressive, it's risky. Long-distance travel exposes hammerheads to multiple threats. Fishing zones, changing water temperatures, declining prey availability, habitat fragmentation, and because these sharks cross international boundaries, their survival depends on policies that vary widely from one region to another. Protected in one area, exploited in another, there's no single safe base, only temporary ones. Here's something we don't talk about enough, though. When populations decline, social behaviors can disappear before the species does. If there aren't enough individuals to form schools, the schools vanish. If migratory knowledge isn't passed down, then the roots are lost. If nursery populations shrink, future generations never reach a stage where these behaviors even emerge. In other words, the loss isn't just physical, it's cultural. Now, somewhere in the ocean, a scalloped hammerhead is swimming alone in a place where not long ago there would have been hundreds. No formation, no structure, no shared movement, just distance. And the absence is where the real story begins. Because to understand why these schools are disappearing, we have to go back to the beginning, to where these sharks first enter the world, and to the fragile environments determine whether they survive long enough to join them. Okay, so now we're going to go part three, which is the reproduction and then early life of the sharks. So before the ocean, open ocean, before the migrations, the hunting, the vast distances, every scalloped hammerhead shark begins its life in a place that feels almost fragile. Not deep water, not the endless blue, but the edges. Shallow coastal environments like a mangrove forest or protected bays, places where the land and sea blur into one another. The water here is warmer, cloudier, filled with nutrients carried from the rivers and tides. It's not like a place you expect a shark, but for scalloped hammerhead sharks, it's everything. Unlike many fish, scalloped hammerheads don't lay eggs. They give birth to live young. This reproductive strategy is called viviparity, and is more complex than most people realize. After mating, the female carries the developing embryos inside her body for nearly a year. During this time, the embryos are connected to her through a structure similar to the placenta. Nutrients pass through directly from mother to offspring. Oxygen, energy, growth. It's an investment, a significant one, because during this period, the female must balance her own survival with the demands of the developing dozens of pups. When the time comes to give birth, female scallop hammerheads don't just stay in open water. They move, often traveling long distances back to the same coastal nurseries where they themselves may have been born. This suggests something remarkable. Site fidelity, a kind of biological memory that guides them back to specific locations, generation after generation. Not random, not accidental, intentional. Now, a single female can give birth to anywhere between 15 to 40 pups, each one fully formed, each one already equipped with distinctive hammerhead shaped head, though softer and smaller, and slightly more rounder than the adults. At birth, they measure roughly 40 to 55 centimeters in length, small but not helpless, because from the moment they enter the water, they are alone. There's no nurturing, no protection, no teaching. Once the pups are born, then the mother leaves. And the young sharks may immediately begin navigating their environment, finding food, avoiding predators, and learning how to survive. This may seem harsh, but the evolutionary terms, it's efficient. Producing many offsprings increases the chance that at least some of them will survive. This is where nursery habitats become critical, because while the pups are independent, they are also incredibly vulnerable. Their small size makes them targets for larger predators, including other sharks. Their swimming ability is developing. Their hunting skills are basic. They need an environment that gives them that chance. So these nursing areas provide several key advantages for them. One is protection from larger predators. Shallow waters are often inaccessible to bigger sharks, reducing predation risk. And then number two is abundant food sources. Small fish, crustaceans, and other prey are plentiful in the nutrient-rich environments. Number three is the warmer temperatures. Warmer water accelerates metabolism and growth, helping pups develop more quickly. And number four is structural complexity. Mangrove roots, muddy bottoms, and estuarine channels provide hiding places and reduce exposure. Together, these factors create a kind of natural shield, not perfect, but enough. A brief period in their lives, scalloped hammerheads experience something close to safety. Within these shallow environments, young hammerheads begin to develop their skills they'll need later in life. They learn how to hunt small prey. They refine their sensory abilities in experimenting with movement, detection, and response. They begin to understand these surroundings, but growth is slow and danger is constant, even in nurseries, threats exist. Larger fish, birds, and human activity. Survival is never guaranteed. Now, pups can remain in the nurseries for around several months to a few years, depending on the environmental conditions and the regional differences. As they grow, their bodies change. Their massive head becomes more pronounced, their swimming becomes more efficient, and their hunting becomes more precise. Eventually, something shifts. The nursery is no longer enough. So at a certain point, the juveniles' hammerheads begin to move outward, transitioning from protected coastal zones into deeper, more open waters. This is a critical phase, because it's where mortality rates often spike. There are no longer shields by his shallow environments. They are not yet fully adapted to the demands of adult life. It's a gap, a dangerous one. Everything we've talked about so far, the birth, the nurseries, the early growth, it all depends on one thing, the stability of coastal eco-environments. And that stability is disappearing. The mangrove forests, which serve as essential nursery habitats, are being cleared at alarming rates for coastal development, for aquaculture, for tourism. When mangrove groves are removed, the entire structures of the habitat collapse. No roots, no shelter, no buffer against waves and erosion. For younger hammerheads, it's like losing the walls of a nursery. There's also runoff from agriculture carries chemicals, fertilizers, and waste into coastal waters. Urban development adds plastics, heavy metals, and sewage. These pollutants don't just degrade water quality, they affect the growth, health, and survival. Young sharks are particularly sensitive because their bodies are still developing. Now, boat traffic increases noise and physical disturbance, so human presence is another one of the big things. Fishing activity extends into shallow waters, and even when they're not directly targeted, juvenile hammerheads can become entangled in nets and caught on hooks. And because they're small, they rarely survive. Now, here's the part that doesn't often go noticed. When nursery habitats are damaged, the impact isn't immediate. You don't see mass die-offs. You don't see sudden disappearances. All you see is absence. Fewer juveniles reaching adulthood. Fewer adults returning to breeding grounds. Fewer schools forming in the open ocean. It's a delay, a gap between cause and effect. And by the time the decline becomes obvious, it's already been happening for years. Now, for the scalloped hammerhead shark, survival isn't just about avoiding predators or finding food. It's about making it through each stage of life in an environment that becomes less stable, less predictable, and less forgiving. And the earliest stage, the most vulnerable stage, is where the greatest losses are now occurring. Now, I want you guys to picture something. I want you guys to close your eyes, take a deep breath, and picture a shallow bay at dusk. The water is calm, clouded slightly with sediment. Small ripples move across the surface. Beneath it, a young hammerhead shark glides slowly, its movements still uncertain, its senses still developing. Doesn't know the risks, doesn't know the futures, only knows how to move, how to search, how to survive. And whenever it will leave the bay, that depends on forces it cannot see. Because beyond these shallow waters, beyond these nurseries, a different set of threats waiting, larger, faster, and far more destructive than anything an evolution prepared them for. You can open your eyes now, if you did open them. Next is going to be the industrial fishing and the fin trade. I've talked about it, but I'm going to go in more detail about it. Now, out in the open ocean, far from the coast, far from the sheltered nurseries, there are no boundaries, no visible borders, just water stretching in every direction. Moving through it quietly and almost invisibly are the largest fishing operations humanity has ever created. From above, they look small, just vessels scattered across the endless blue. But beneath the surface, they extend for miles. Lines, hooks, nets, systems designed for one purpose. Efficiency, maximizing catch, minimizing time. They don't just remove fish, they remove presence. Modern industrial fishing is not a localized activity. It's a global, highly coordinated, and extraordinarily effective. Longline fishing vessels, for example, deploy lines that can stretch up to 100 kilometers. Attached to those lines are thousands of baited hooks, each one potential capture points. These lines drift through the water column, intercepting anything that bites. Tuna, swordfish, mahi-mahi, and unintentionally, sharks, including the scalloped hammerhead shark. There are two ways scalloped hammerheads are caught. The first is intentional. The second isn't. And both are devastating. In some regions, hammerheads are specifically sought after, not for their meat, not primarily, though, but for their fins. The global demand for shark fins, particularly for shark fin soup, has created a market where certain species are more valuable than others, and hammerheads sit near at the top. Their fins are large, distinctive, highly prized, which makes them a target. Shark finning is one of the most controversial practices in modern fishing, and one of the most misunderstood. A shark is caught often on a long line brought alongside the vessel, and the fins are removed. In many cases, the rest of the body just discarded. Don't even take it. Sometimes while the shark, and this is all while the shark is still alive too, unable to swim, unable to maintain the flow of the water over its gills, it sinks slowly until it no longer can survive. It's not fast. It's not dramatic. Rarely seen. But it happens. Repeatedly, cross oceans, every day. Now, why hammerheads? Not all shark fins are equal in a global market. Hammerhead fins, including those from the scalloped hammerhead shark, are particularly valuable because of their high fin ray density, what traders call needle content. This makes them desirable for certain textures in shark fin soup, which makes them command higher prices, and higher prices create stronger incentives. Now, here's where things become complicated. For many fishing communities, especially in developing regions, shark finning fishing is not driven by malice, it's driven by economics. A single set of fins can be worth significantly more than the rest of the shark's body, which creates a system where maximizing fin yield becomes the priority. Not sustainability, not long-term population health, short-term value. Even when hammerheads aren't being targeted, they're still being caught. This is known as bycatch. Scalloped hammerheads is one of the most significant sources of morality. When a hammerhead takes the bait of a long hook, the outcome is really good. Unlike some shark species, hammerheads are highly sensitive to stress. They struggle intensely when hooked. Their bodies aren't built for prolonged exertion under restraint. They tire quickly, and in many cases, they die before the line is ever retrieved. And this isn't just behavioral, it's biological. Scalloped hammerheads have a lower tolerance for lactic acid buildup, the chemical produced in muscles during intense activity. When they fight against the hook, the buildup happens repeatedly. Their systems can't recover, so even if they are released, they often don't survive. Here's one of the biggest challenges in understanding this crisis. We don't have exact numbers, because much of this mortality goes unrecorded. Bycatch is often unreported. Illegal finning operations operate outside of the monitoring systems. And in many regions, data collection is inconsistent or incomplete. So what we have are estimates, trends, indicators, and all point to the same direction, down. In some parts of the world, scalloped hammerheads populations have declined more than 80%. In others, they have disappeared entirely. Areas where they once formed mass schools, now they only see a few individuals or none. This is what makes the host particularly alarming. What makes this particularly alarming is how quickly it happens. The scalloped hammerhead, has evolved over millions of years. The adaptations are found across the geological time. Its behavior shaped by patterns in the ocean. And in just a few decades, its stability has been disrupted. This isn't just about one species. It's about a scale. Industrial fishing operates at a level far beyond anything that natural systems evolved to withstand. Predation exists in nature, but it's balanced, regulated by energy, competition, and environmental limits. But what we've introduced, it has no such limits, only demand. There is a concept in environmental science called shifting baseline syndrome. It means that each generation perceives the state of environment that they grow up with as normal. So if shark populations decline gradually, each new generation sees fewer than sharks and assume that's how it's always been. The memory of abundance fades, not suddenly, but quietly. Imagine a long line stretching through the open ocean, hooks suspended in water, unseen, waiting. A scalloped hammerhead approaches. It's not aware of the line. It's not aware of the system. It just detects movement, a signal. It turns, bites. In that moment, everything changes. It's already declining. It's already struggling to recover. Now, because what happens next isn't isolated, it's repeated across oceans, across years, across generations. And even beyond targeted bycatch, there's another layers of the story in which makes the recovery more difficult, because for scalloped hammerheads, loss isn't just about how many they remove, it's how we can slowly, they can replace them. I kind of want to go into the biology of everything. I think I have time for it. I have biology and then I have a conclusion. I don't know if I have time for it in the studio, but I will try to make it quick. So there's like the mismatch story between one side, you have the animal shaped by time, millions of years of gradual adaptation, slowly change, stable systems, and then the other, you have industrially driven by speed, efficiency, scale, and demand. And the caught between these two forces is the shark. To understand why scallops or hammerheads are declining so rapidly, we need to understand how they live. Not just how they hunt or migrate, but how they grow. They're not fast growing animals, as I mentioned. They don't reach maturity in a year. Even a few years. It takes, depending on the region, it takes like 10 to 15 years for a hammerhead can be capable of reproducing. Think about that. A decade for something more contributing to the next generation. And during that time, the shark must survive predation in early life, habitat changes, fishing pressure, environment shifts. Every year survived is an investment, and the individual is removed before reproducing. The entire investment is lost. Even if they reach maturity, though, it's not consistent. Females don't give birth every year. The gestation period is like 10 to 12 months. There may be gaps between reproducing cycles, so while a single litter may include 20 to 40 pups, these events are spaced out, which means population growth is slow. And this is why in ecology, species like sharks are considered low productivity. They mature late, they reproduce infrequently, and they invest heavily in each generation. This strategy works in stable environments where mortality is relatively low, where individuals have time to reach adulthood, where populations are removed faster than they recover, but the balance is distributed. If more sharks are reproduced every year than added for reproduction, the population decreases. And that's where it becomes critical. Population decline doesn't always look dramatic. It often follows a pattern. First, numbers drop slightly, then breeding individuals become less common, and then younger sharks struggle to be replaced. Then reproduction slows, and eventually the population reaches a tipping point where recovery becomes extremely difficult. One of the most damaging impacts of the fishing pressure is the removal of large mature males. These individuals produce the most offspring. They carry genetic diversity of the population. They are, in many ways, the foundation of recovery. When they are removed, the entire reproductive capacity of the species declines. At population strength, the genetic diversity decreases. This is also known as bottleneck, which is where you can get variations where disease resistance declines, adaptability decreases, and long-term survival becomes more uncertain. The population, even if the number stabilized temporarily, the population is still vulnerable. So it's a long time. It takes a long time for everything to recover, and it's a long strain. But there is, I think, some hope. Yeah, they're not extinct yet. They're not extinct. But they're not extinct yet. It still moves through parts of the Pacific, still appears along certain coastlines, still forms schools, though smaller and far less frequently than before, which means something important. There's still time. Over the past two decades, awareness around shark conservation has grown significantly. What was once a largely invisible issue happens far offshore, out of sight, and has become part of a global conservation, and that conservation has led to action. One of the most important frameworks is cities. This is the international agreement regulates the trade of wildlife and wildlife products across borders. Scalloped hammerheads are listed under its protection, which means the trade of their fins and other parts is restricted and monitored. It doesn't eliminate the trade, but it makes it harder, more visible, more accountable. Some countries have taken additional steps, banning shark finning entirely, requiring sharks to be landed with fins naturally attached, establishing catch limits or protection of certain species. In certain regions, shark sanctuaries have been created in areas where commercial shark fishing is prohibited. These sanctuaries act as refuge, a space where populations can stabilize. There's also marine protected areas, as well, because they don't just stay in one space, they move around, you know that. But there is limited protection, because protection is unneeded. Enforcement is inconsistent, and not in some areas regulation exists on paper, but not in practice. Legal fishing still continues, and habitat destruction hasn't stopped, but so while progress is real, it's incomplete. Now, one of the most powerful tools right now is data. For conservation, scientists use satellite tags, acoustic tracking, and genetic analysis to better understand the hammerhead behavior, where they migrate, where they breed, and where they're most at risk. This information is critical because you can't protect what you don't understand. Every new data point helps refine the conservation strategies. In some cases, this has led to targeted protections, closing fishing zones during key seasons, or expanding protected areas to include essential habitats. It's not perfect, but it's progress. It's also another shift that's happening too, which one that's hard to measure, but it's important. This the way we think about sharks is changing. For decades, sharks were framed as threats, dangerous, aggressive, something to fear. But that narrative is evolving. People will begin to see sharks, especially the species like the saddle hammerhead sharks, is what they are. Complex, specialized, essential, not villains, not monsters, but animals playing in it in a role, their role in a large system for themselves. Now, awareness also affects behavior. Consumers are questioning where seafood comes from. Restaurants are removing shark fin soup from menus. Sustainability certifications are becoming more common. And these shifts matter because demand drives. Now, this is a question that we can't really fully answer. Or do they have enough time? Because recovery for species like the scalloped hammerhead shark is slow, even under ideal conditions, decades, not years. And even if the recovery only happened if pressures are reduced enough to allow it. Now, I want you guys to just close your eyes, go back to the ocean, early morning, still water, faint light. See that a shark? Its shape, the position, the design, unchanged. But what surrounds it is danger. What surrounds it has changed. Fewer others nearby, fewer signals, fewer traces of what used to be much larger presence. Extinction doesn't always look like disappearance. Sometimes it looks like reduction. Silence is where there used to be movements. Absence where there used to be patterns. The fading is something gradual that almost goes unnoticed. But the scalloped hammerhead shark is still here. But whether it remains part of the ocean or future or becomes something we only talk about in past depends on what happens next and what you choose to be. This has been Faded Tales. If this episode stayed with you, talk about it. Just relax. Because the more we understand what's fading, the better chance we have to keep it from disappearing entirely. Thank you.